Welcome to KG News Morning Magazine. It's Thursday, July 7th, 2022. I'm your host, Alexis Kenyon. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. We are in the second day of our summer Stay Cool with KGNU fun drive, which means we have a special program coming up for you. First, we talk with a researcher who studies the different ways left and right-wing activists use social media. After that, we check in with our interns to hear what they think. And then we have the Cannabis News Report. At the bottom of the hour, it's the BBC News headlines. Then it's a super-sized edition of Radio Nibbles with special giveaways, including What Our Food Ate, a fascinating piece of nonfiction looking into the way soil can affect our body's microbiome. At 9:30, it's the Morning Sound Alternative, bringing you an eclectic mix of music until noon. That's all coming up, but first, these headlines with KGNU's Christian Getabai.
Digital license plate developing company Reviver announced Wednesday that they will soon start selling digital license plates to Coloradans that comply with state requirements. The announcement came after Governor Jared Polis signed House Bill 22-1162 back in April. The bill legalizes the use of digital license plates in the state of Colorado and will go into effect later this year. According to a report by Nine News, Reviver co-founder Neville Boston stated that our mission is to transform vehicle ownership and registration into a more seamless and modern experience, and we can't thank our many partners throughout the state enough. These digital plates will hopefully become a public safety tool and aid with cases of expired plates or stolen vehicles. Governor Jared Polis announced Wednesday that state agencies are now barred from working with other state agencies in arresting anybody in the state of Colorado for seeking or providing reproductive care. This includes abortions, birth control, and other forms of health care. The only exception being if the person is doing something that would be illegal in the state of Colorado. The decision comes following the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade June 24th, which stripped abortion protections on the federal level. Polis is working to protect both agencies that assist citizens with these services and those who need these services. Other liberal governors around the nation are enacting similar orders to protect those seeking reproductive health care outside of their home state. This week, Denver joined cities across the U.S. who came out to express their support of DACA. Recent Supreme Court decisions have led to DACA members fearing for their protection within the program. Juan Gallegos organized a rally that took place Wednesday evening outside of the west steps of the Colorado State Capitol building in protest of a potential challenge to the DACA program. Gallegos is a DACA recipient who told CBS4 that the program helped him build his life. Gallegos organized the protest after the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, is a program that protects the children of undocumented individuals. The program also allows individuals to stay in the country without the possibility of being deported. Outspoken DACA opponents say the program evaded legal and administrative procedure and has harmful effects on the financial stability of the states. There are more than 18,000 undocumented DACA recipients in the state of Colorado since the program began in 2012. University of Colorado's mascot Ralphie has been officially named. Jimmy Searfoss has more.
The University of Colorado's mascot has officially been named, and it's not Baby Ralphie. After a fundraiser done by the university where people could vote through donations on what nickname the new buffalo would take, Ember ended up being the name with the most donation dollars. A few nicknames of previous buffaloes that have taken the Ralphie mantle include Blackout, Tequila, and Moonshine. Ember received 43.8% of donation dollars, followed by the name Blitz, which received 29.5%. The name Sixer and Tiny also received donations. All donations go directly to the Ralphie program, which care for and house the buffalo. The nickname comes from the wildfire that threatened the ranch she was staying on after she had been abandoned by her mom shortly after birth. At only 2 years old, Ember will go into her second season leading the University of Colorado football team onto the field. Her debut in the 2021 season came after the previous Ralphie, Blackout, had to retire for being too fast for her handlers. For KGNU, this is Jimmy Searfoss.
President Joe Biden announced on Wednesday that he plans to nominate current Denver International Airport CEO Philip Washington to lead the Federal Aviation Administration. The decision comes after the former head of the FAA, Stephen Dixon, stepped down from his position in March of this year. The current acting head of the administration is former Delta Airlines executive and pilot Billy Nolen. Washington has an extensive resume filled with experience involving aviation and transportation in general. He served as Denver's RTD director, ran Denver's regional transportation agency, led the Los Angeles County Metropolitan Transportation Authority, and even helped Biden transition into office by taking lead on the Administration for Transportation Policy. Expect warm temperatures today with cloudy conditions. In Boulder, a high of 86 and a low of 61. In Denver, a high of 90 and a low of 63. In Fort Collins, a high of 86 and a low of 59. Outside the Boulder studio, it's 57 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Christian Garibay.
Magazine. I'm your host, Alexis Kenyon. In the aftermath of the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade last month, the internet and streets across the country filled with pro-choice activism. Hashtag activism or clicktivism in the last 10 years has transformed left-wing movements, allowing people to express solidarity with each other and connect online. At the same time, for some, there's a growing conversation about the integrity of clicktivism and whether or not it has positive effects on a real-world movement. To talk more about clicktivism and the unique ways social and political movements play out online, I spoke with Dean Freelon, an associate professor at the Hussman School of Journalism Media at UNC Chapel Hill. Dean, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Great. Yeah, sure.
So, Dean, to start, I wanted to get into your research. You've been studying clicktivism or online activism, and one thing that you found is that it plays a much different role on the left compared to the right. On the left, it's really at the core of a lot of social change, but on the right, not so much. Can you tell me more about this?
Yeah, well, actually, so, one of the major differences is that on the right, you've got the right-wing media ecosystem, which is very money-laden network of sites, and they largely are coordinated in terms of the messages that they're pushing out, and the money there is a lot more in evidence. They tend to get better TV ratings, radio ratings, that sort of thing. We talk about the left, you've got a lot more hashtag activism on that side. So from, Fight for 15, Me Too, Black Lives Matter, have really come from the left. And so typically the way to the masses tends to be through this kind of grassroots path of pushing hashtags and online memes and slogans and things like that, which is then picked up by the mainstream media and discussed in that way. So Black Lives Matter is a great example of that. Me Too started as an online meme, actually, 10 years before the sort of 2017 explosion that was prompted by some journalism in New York or in other places. And so the pathways are quite different, and the ways that people hear about this kind of content is quite different as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. Some of the critique, especially on left-leaning clicktivists, is that this hashtag activism or clicktivism is kind of a way to brag about your progressive virtues without really getting involved. I think we saw that a lot during the George Floyd protests with the black box on Instagram. What's your take?
Sure. Well, I can't really speak for anybody else other than myself. My general opinion of that sort of thing is the research that we review shows that people who engage in so-called clicktivism tend to be people who also engage in other ways, both online and offline. And so there's little evidence that there are people who only do clicktivism. It's sort of a performative way. I think clicktivism itself is performative, but the issue is when you see somebody's doing that, you don't also see the other things that they're doing that are not as visible. And so I think it's a major assumption, posting a black square is the only thing this person is doing, and that they're only doing it for, self-aggrandizing purposes or to go along with a trend or whatever. I think that's a pretty uncharitable way of looking at things. I think another one of the critiques is that it drowned out the voices of people of color. I think that's somewhat of a different critique. So the kind of your virtue signaling and not doing anything real is one critique. It's drowning out the voices of people of color is a different one that requires a different response. And so there, I think it's, well, if you've already got a platform, well, why don't you share the message of a person of color, somebody who's lift their voices up instead of just your own. And so I think that is another response. And so I think that, at least for me, clicktivism opens up some opportunities to engage in some interesting conversations, because the message is essentially, well, you said you're interested in this, where you said you agree with this. So let's continue on that path and help you get where, you know, we as the movement feel like you need to go if you're not already there. So that's my take on it.
Yeah. So I told you about this over email, but part of the reason I was interested in doing this story is because I had a conversation with one of our interns who was hesitant to get audio and photo from last week's Roe rally at Denver's Capitol because he was worried about coming off as self-aggrandizing or like he was using the movement just for his own clicks. I mean, what would you tell him? Should he be concerned about that?
Well, I'm not sure I fully understand your intern's position because the way you explained it, there's a couple different things going on. So engaging in clicktivism is one thing, but it seemed like you were saying reporting on it would be considered self-aggrandizing, which I don't understand at all because like journalism is literally just telling people what's going on. So if it's a protest going on, you're bored on it. I mean, that's just how it works. I think some of this is probably generational, right? I mean, I grew up in, you know, an era where journalism was a pretty well circumscribed area, but, you know, ultimately it's, at least in my opinion, is differentiated from somebody who is not a professional journalist and just goes on social media and writes about it based on the training and the sort of remit of the journalist. So yeah, I mean, that's, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. So my final question, what do you think is the most impactful type of activism within social movements, online or otherwise?
Well, I think it depends on, one, who you are, and second, what the actual area is. I think one of the most important things people can do is vote, right? So that's everybody from your mayor to your district attorney, all the way up to the federal level. But, you know, the other thing, too, is that whenever it's somebody is engaging in activism on behalf of a group that I'm not a member of, you know, I try to listen to what it is they want, and if it's low effort enough, I try to do it, right? So just doing, giving people what they need to flourish. So, I mean, I think that's just a really huge step in and of itself.
Dean, thank you so much for talking with me.
All right, thanks a lot.
Dean Freelon is an associate professor of Hussman School of Journalism Media at UNC Chapel Hill. You're listening to KGNU. You're listening to KGNU. This is Alexis Kenyon hosting with my co-host, Rosanna Longo-Better. And we have a special treat because we have so much fun with these guys. Three of our interns are in here to, well, first of all, respond. Luis, will you respond to Dean Freelon's take on collectivism? And like, what do you think?
Well, I totally agree with the professor. I really liked his take on some of the clicktivism things that many people are doing. And I feel like it just builds a little bit more confidence in ourselves here at KGNU because we go out in the field and report on some of these events. And having that little bit of a support structure is really cool too. And seeing that support from our community members is also really important. So, yeah.
I think that's really important. One of the really valuable services that KGNU provides is, you know, shaping voices for the future. And one of the things that I think that with technology and social media, sometimes the lines between journalism and social media influencer can be kind of blurry, and so it's really great that we get to get your guys, like, to, you know, teach you guys but also learn from you guys, learn from the way that that you grew up and the way that you consume information. So this is this is just such a valuable way and valuable part of KGNU's programming. So we have two other interns in here. We have Christian Getabai, who just did the headlines. Hey, Christian.
Hola.
And Jimmy Searfoss, who you guys may know him from his amazing sports column on Friday.
Thank you.
So, Christian, so we just heard you do headlines. Coming in here, what was your experience with this type of thing, with reporting or radio?
Prior to the experience, I had basically, like, no background experience with reporting or, you know, I guess researching local news. So it's definitely something I had to get used to every Thursday morning, sometimes Wednesday, having to find stories that I think, you know, people got to know about, because there's a lot of local stuff that I think goes under our radar. So I think, you know, it's a very cool experience.
Were you ready? Like, did you know what you were getting into?
Not at all. No, I was thrown right in. Yeah.
We do. We throw people in, and it's kind of rocky and kind of be really intense at first, but I feel like it's one of the best ways to teach people. And I don't know, it just feels like it goes, it really aligns with KGNU's message of like community and staying within this community and creating news that is generative and inclusive.
Completely. And I'm just jumping in. Thank you so much for what you have shared, guys. I want to make sure that I remind people that we are keeping it cool here in KGNU during our summer fun drive this morning. And I want to thank a donor in Pine Cliff who appreciates the coverage of Democracy Now! On KGNU. And also, I want to point out that I'm here as the equity reporter, bilingual reporter here in KGNU, because I was sitting where you are, guys. I was an intern and I was a paid intern. And I want to really highlight this because it's only by the contribution of our listener members that we can pull this, that we can have students here, just like I was, to learn the ropes of real radio, real media that comes to you in a powerful way. Because yes, you can click here and click there and say you like this and that, but that does not make a difference. Making a difference is what we need. Please call us 303-449-4885 and give us a contribution so that we can keep the doors open in a way to these students and the safe space so that they can get the hands-on on real radio.
Jimmy, we haven't heard from you yet. Tell us about your experience here.
It really has been great. There's been a lot of trust, you know, given me when I walked in. I'm a journalism student at CU right now, University of Colorado, and I couldn't really imagine a better place, you know, right, to start off. This is my first internship I've ever had. They're, you know, y'all let me do what I want to do growing up. You know, I want to be a sports journalist, and they, you know, y'all pretty much said, great.
Well, he's great at it, too, so...
Well, it really has been great. The equipment here is fantastic, and they really just kind of are really generous and, you know, accepting my pitches of what I want to do. Like, for example, the Avs parade the other day, I threw that pitch in the middle of the playoffs, and they've been really supportive the whole way, and they were with me and following up with me while I was at the parade, and make sure I got everything I needed. So it's been a great experience.
Well, and also, so I think that the point that, like, the reason why we want to hear from you guys is because hearing your stories are stories that we wouldn't pitch, you know, because we aren't students and we aren't, you know, living your lives. And we probably wouldn't get them from other staffers. But from you guys, we get totally different and new stories that I feel like really help to bridge gaps between generations and within our community, which is really a pretty divided community in terms of, you know, just age-wise, but, you know, class-wise and, you know, from one town to the next. Luis, you did a story recently. Can you tell me about it?
Yeah, so I recently interviewed a student at the University of Colorado. If you heard the story, her name is Ruby. She is now a senior now at CU, and she was talking about how it was hard for her to get housing here in Boulder since some of the rent prices are really, really high. So she was telling me her story about how she moved from her dorm room all the way to a low-income area here in Boulder, but she ended up moving out of Boulder to Broomfield. But right now she is having a wonderful time with her roommate in Broomfield, but I feel like some of these issues is a really good way to, like, shine a light on the issues here in Boulder, but not just here in Boulder, but also in the area. So many of these issues is something that we cover here at KGNU, and it's really important to do that.
Yeah, and I think it's just, like, you know, tackling issues that may be national conversations from unique angles and from regional angles and from, you know, students' angles. And I think that's all the time we have, unfortunately, you guys. Thank you so much for coming in, talking with. If you haven't donated, if you'd like to donate, please do it now. You can go onto our website, www.kgnu.org, where you can also check out Luis's story while you're at it. But please donate. It's worth it. We want to continue this program. You can also call. The Boulder office line is 303-449-4885. 303-449-4885. Donate. Every donation counts. So please pick up the phone, go online, send us your donations. We really appreciate it. And it's going to programming that will sustain our community. So coming up next, we have Cannabis Report.
And before we go there, Alexis, I just want to point out that we have a goal this morning of $250. $250. And everybody who contributes is entering to two drawings to win a pair of tickets with camping to the 2020 Rocky Grass Music Festival. Give us a call to 303-449-4885 this morning and give the support that we need.
This time on Cannabis Report, longtime marijuana correspondent Leland Rucker digs deeper into the possible reasons for the continuing drop in cannabis sales across the state.
And now it's time for the Cannabis Report here on KGNU Community Radio. As always, I'm joined by cannabis correspondent Leland Rucker. Leland, thanks so much for being here.
Good to be here.
So you've been taking another look at some of the trends as far as what's happening in the cannabis industry with sales. Tell us about what you're seeing right now.
Well, you know, we talked about this just a little bit a couple of months ago about the downturn in the marijuana industry in Colorado. And latest figures indicate that that downturn has continued. And we talked about a lot of things that might be part of it. States around Colorado are now offering recreational sales. They weren't at the beginning. And, you know, perhaps the industry is reaching most of its users. And so there's not going to be those giant leaps anymore. We won't see that double digit growth that we've seen in the past. Another factor I didn't mention back then is that cannabis businesses are still subject to taxes. And unlike other businesses, they can't write off things that other businesses are allowed. They have to, they have no write-offs whatsoever. That's just one of the parts of the laws. And there was House Bill 1317, which imposed more requirements on medical marijuana patients and curbed the amount of concentrate that a patient can buy in one day to 8 grams. And that's only 2 grams for people 18 to 20 years old. And that probably helped as well. But whatever the reason, sales are falling in recreational and medical markets. There's a thing called Headset that provides insights into cannabis consumer trends. And in Colorado, sales for marijuana stood at $153 million in April. That's a 26% decrease compared to $206 million sold that month last year. Now, it's still $153 million. That's a lot of money. Medical sales really took a hit. They plunged to about $20 million in April from almost $40 million in April a year ago. And Aaron Smith, the CEO of the National Cannabis Industry Association, he said, he told the Denver Post the industry is facing problems just like any other business. He said, obviously, the inflation factor is happening everywhere, but I don't see the legal cannabis market going away by any means, and I don't either. I think that that's kind of important to bring out, is that it's just like all other businesses. You have to watch what you're doing. A lot of people think that cannabis businesses were made people instant millionaires. That's not true. It might have been true for a couple of people, but that's not true for most of them. And, you know, in that same report, Headset found that U.S. cannabis market is worth more than $30 billion. That's a lot of money. And the cannabis tourism industry is valued around $17 billion. Of course, when things get legal, that will change. But in Colorado, Buddy Boy Brands, 7 metro area dispensaries, they closed their doors permanently this month. And owner John Fritzel said it was a tax balance and blaming the market downturn. So there's definitely something going on here. And I think that another thing to think about is dispensaries are numerous. There's a lot of them. They're competing against each other.
Sales have kind of leveled out after a spike in the last couple of years thanks to COVID, and prices have fallen. There's fewer cannabis tourists, and the state itself doesn't push cannabis at all. It's still saying that Colorado is a place for mountains and recreation and never for cannabis. The state just doesn't want to promote that at all. Also problematic is the steep drop in medical sales. That's something everybody has noticed. And there's always been questions about how long the medical industry will survive with less and less people coming in. So we'll be watching that as we go along.
Well, Leland, we want to thank you, as always, for keeping us in the loop on what's happening with cannabis news. And similarly, since it is part of KGNU's summer fund drive right now, I want to extend a special thanks to KGNU as well for giving us the opportunity to bring this type of news to our listeners. Cannabis news is something that is fairly unique still across the country to be able to have access to, especially on a semi-biweekly basis like we have here at KGNU. So if this is something that you find interesting, if you like tuning in and hearing the Cannabis Report here the first and third Thursday of every month with myself, I'm Hanalee Myers, and Leland Rucker, we certainly enjoy bringing you this news and make sure that you get some insight and keep in touch with what's happening in this new stage of the war on drugs and its development here in Colorado. So if this is the type of news that you find valuable, we ask you to please pick up your phones, give us a call at 303-449-4885, or you can go to kgnu.org. Leland, I know you've been doing this here at KGNU for a long time, and it is a unique opportunity. I know you've been covering cannabis for a long time, but I think KGNU provides a unique opportunity to do so.
Well, just like KGNU provides, the news business is going away. You know, it's changing. I won't say it's going away. It's changing. And KGNU is still doing a lot of local news. That's what I try to do in the Cannabis Report, is only Colorado-based news. That's the importance of KGNU, is that there's still, you still have an outlet for people who are watching local news, and we need that all the time. So give us a call, 303-449-4885, or go to kgnu.org. You can do that real easily and simply. And we thank you very much. And thanks to all the volunteers here who spend their time making this station what it is.
Yes, thank you so much, Leland. And we do thank all of our listeners who have pledged their support thus far, and we ask you to join them. Thank you so much. For KGNU, I'm Hanalee Myers.
And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for a supersized edition of Radio Nibbles. Our host, John Lendor, food columnist at Boulder Weekly, will be interviewing three guests. One of them, Andrew Nowak, is a Longmont farmer. That's coming up just after these headlines, which we will be joining in progress.